Good morning. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. My name is Amy Wheeler. I get a lot of feedback from you all telling me that you kind of like these solo episodes. And for me, they're quite easy because I don't have to read an entire book and come up with questions and go back and forth with the author. So I'm kind of appreciating the workload being a little less on these solo episodes. And really cool thing is that I get to kind of talk about what's alive in me and, the teachings of yoga as they are experienced in the human system. So today we're going to talk about understanding our own suffering. Some of you know that as the five kleshas, but I really think we have to back up a little bit. Many of you know that I'm the department chair of yoga therapy and Ayurveda at Notre Dame of Maryland University, the only master's degree in the country with an accredited program. So we're constantly at the university going back over our curriculum and really looking at it and saying, is this serving our students? Is it staying true to the teachings? And just on Friday, another colleague said, hey, let's really look at the assessment around the five kleshas. And she had kindly emailed to me, like, here's what we currently have, but here's where I think it could be even better. And I was like, oh, hallelujah. That is so, so good. Let's go with that. So that's what kind of got me thinking over the weekend about understanding suffering and why we, as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, and most importantly, as human beings, need to understand the fundamental teachings of yoga in this realm, because it is about low back pain. It is about having a dysregulated nervous system. It is about having difficulty in our relationships. But ultimately, all of that comes down to a relationship that you're having with yourself. And how can you regulate yourself? How can you tune into yourself? How can you be a more compassionate, kind human being? So the central question of today is, why do we as human beings suffer even though we're trying, keyword trying, to live well? And I think Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, as I've been saying throughout this entire season 10 series, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra is a guidebook for daily living. It's not a philosophical text as much as, especially chapters 1 and 2, are the application of what it means to be human and experience our suffering and our joy in this human body. We call that the phenomenological approach, if you want a fancy word for it. But like, what does it mean to be human? And I think especially in the age of artificial intelligence and all the outsourcing that we're doing of our hopefully mundane tasks, let us not outsource what it means to be human. Let us not take AI and use it as a way to not feel suffering. I saw a very sad thing the other day that this gentleman is preferring his AI girlfriend with screens all over his house and her just giving him all sorts of positive feedback 24/7. She's not a real being, she's on a screen, but he interacts with her all day, every day. And he just said, I'm such a more happy person. And I would argue that the goal of being human is to feel the fullness of the human experience and even the suffering and even responding to that suffering. It isn't to feel happy and pleasant all the time. So this is where Patanjali's Yoga Sutra helps us understand the causes of suffering and the conditions that we can create within ourselves to allow for more clarity, more freedom, and well-being to emerge. Hello, my name is Amy Wheeler, and I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. And today I'll be doing a solo episode as we go deeper and deeper into the eight limbs of yoga in season 10. So let us introduce a Sanskrit term called klesha. And klesha, again, it's a little tiny five-letter word, but I think it's important that we learn that word, that there's some energy that comes with that word. And it basically means the underlying causes of psychological suffering or affliction. The underlying causes of psychological suffering. So they're not simply emotions, they're deeper patterns that are within our psyche and probably our heart and even our nervous system, deeper patterns of misperception of how we interpret reality. So we have our glasses on, which is each of us has a set of biased glasses on that we kind of see the reality as we want it to be. But according to Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, there actually is a reality out there. And it's probably separate or different from your glasses and what you're seeing. So a big part of what is causing us suffering is that the glasses we're wearing with our biases and our lack of compassion and our lack of boundaries and our inability to see how we're harming people, those glasses are not the same as the reality. And that mismatch is essentially what causes us to suffer. So you could say that if we had clarity where our set of glasses matched the external reality that is out there, you know, that we would suffer less. So in this episode, we're going to explore Sankhya philosophy, because Sankhya philosophy is the basis for everything we're talking about today. We're going to explore the five kleshas, and that comes from the second chapter of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. And that's starting with Yoga Sutra, chapter 2, verse 3. We'll talk about how these patterns of suffering kind of emerge in modern life. As we know, the sutras are probably 2,000 years old. How amazing that they're still informing modern life. And then we're going to talk about one of my favorite sutras from chapter 1, verse 3, about svarupe. How do you get to suffer less and, you know, basically point towards this match and clarity between your lens and the world and the reality that's out there towards bringing you to liberation. So that's kind of where we're headed today. So let's first start with Sankhya philosophy, which is a sister school to Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, Raja Yoga, you know, a lot of the yoga that you and I practice every day. And this Sankhya philosophy is kind of the thing that is underlying Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And there's two fundamental principles, which we call Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha being pure awareness, the observer or the witness consciousness that never changes. It's just sitting and watching. And it's living a human life. It's getting to be in the human vessel, but just to observe all that is. This witness consciousness, there's a lot of spaciousness, allowing for the good feelings and the not so good feelings. One of the things that gave me a pause about Purusha when I first started learning about it was that Purusha is okay when we suffer. It doesn't have a judgment. It doesn't want us to, oh, we have to get rid of that suffering. It just is. It's observing what is. Prakriti, on the other hand, is nature, nature itself. So everything that you feel, everything that you touch, everything that you taste, everything that you sense, it's the experience that you're having in this human system, including your body, your mind, your emotions, and everything in the material world that you could connect with. So this is a dualistic system, both Sankhya and Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. Some people would argue with that, but for today, we're not going to have that argument. That Purusha and Prakriti are able to rub up against one another. They're able to interact with one another, but they are not actually one. So, like I said, just think today of this whole thing as there's these two things, Purusha and Prakriti. So in Sankhya philosophy, the entire manifest world comes from Prakriti. And as you develop into this human system that you're carrying around, all of that is Prakriti. Within it is housed this witness or this observer, getting to experience life through you as a manifestation. So when, let's just say, the soul or the Purusha kind of comes and rubs up against this new vessel that it's going to inhabit for some time, one of the first things that starts to develop on the Prakriti side, on the you becoming manifest, is called the Buddhi mind. And this Buddhi mind is the part of the mind that is closest to the witness, closest to the observer, doesn't have the glasses on yet, is very, very close to your reality, matches the reality, and therefore there's not a lot of suffering. And that's the mind that we're trying to get to when we meditate. We're trying to settle everything down, clear everything out, do a little mental cleanse with some pranayama, and then get to that very, very still place within ourselves that we can actually see the world from the buddhi mind. Now, that's the first kind of layer of manifestation in Sankhya philosophy. From that, we gain a little more steam. We pick up a few more elements, some more fire, some more earth, some more water, some more space and air. And now there's what we call the ahankara. Some people call it the ego. I don't really love the ego because that is so tainted by Western psychology. It's not like, oh, they're overly ambitious. It's not like that. It's more that you have an identity. You start to realize, hey, I am something. I am someone. And I need to survive. I need fuel. I need shelter. I need clothes. I need things. I need to accumulate things. And I need to possess them. They need to be mine. I need to control things so that I can survive. And you can see here, you know, this is really a hard thing for those of us who grew up without enough to survive, without safety of a family that's caring for us and protecting us, without shelter, without the clothing we needed, without the education. You can see how the ahankara would actually kind of overfunction for the rest of our lives, maybe, to kind of help us make sure that we survive. There's a lot of fear in there. So the buddhi mind is the observer, but the ahankara is like, oh my God, I'm an individual. I'm not part of that oneness over there. I need to survive. And this is where the glasses start to come in. This is where we start to get that separation. And my identity is different from the reality out there. I'm seeing the reality through my glasses, and now things aren't starting to match up because I'm in survival mode. That's where the suffering starts. Now, from that fear, if you will, now we start to develop the patterns of the mind that's interfacing with the external world, the mind that is saying, I like this, I don't like that. I want more of this. I don't want more of that. I'm attached. I'm averse. So you see how the misperception, because now we're trying to survive and we start to cling, causes our mind to function in a certain way. And definitely, depending on who we are, with a lot of fear. And again, the goal of meditation is to settle the mind down, to let go of those attachments, those aversions, that misperception, that fear, that identity of I am separate and I must survive. The whole goal of meditation is to settle all that down so that we can move from that, what we call the manas mind, past the ahankara, past the survival part of us, into the buddhi mind, which again is the part of the mind that is the observer, the witness, the one who is holding us close to our consciousness. So the buddhi mind is the one that we're going for in meditation. Unfortunately, this unfolding of I need to survive and therefore my mind needs to be on fire and, you know, making sure everything's in place and controlling everything, that then leads to certain sensory implications, a grasping, a needing, a wanting. This is where we get addictions from. This is where we shop too much, eat the wrong foods, drink too much coffee, start to even the sensory information that comes from relationships and people and your ambitions and your job and your house and your car, like all of that, your senses want what they want and they don't want things, right? So now you've got your senses involved and that's where the addictions come from. But keep in mind, the senses wanting a glass of wine is simply because your mind is going crazy all over the place because your ahankara is in survival and you're not close to your buddhi. So the solution to addiction is to calm the mind, to draw the senses inward, to help yourself realize that you're safe, you're okay. And, we're not always safe and okay, but we're working towards that so that the observer and the witness can commune with you in this human body. So the key insight here is that the root cause of suffering are that your witness mind, your purusha, and your physical manifestation of your mind, your senses, your body, your thoughts, your emotions, that they're not matching up. And when we have this mismatch is when we get lack of clarity. And this is what we call avidya. Avidya is the root cause of suffering. It's confusing who you really are, which is Purusha, the observer, the witness, with this human body that you're running around in and the mind and the emotions. It's forgetting that you are really Purusha living in this human system. So you probably know that the first of the five kleshas is avidya. It is misperception. It is the root of all the other kleshas. This comes in Yoga Sutra 2.3, where Patanjali lists all five kleshas: avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha, and klesha. And avidya isn't just that you don't have information. That's part of it. You don't know what you don't know. But in Sutra 2.5, Patanjali clarifies that what this misperception or avidya really is that you're mistaking something that is impermanent for something that is permanent. You're mistaking your thoughts, thinking, I'm always going to feel this way. You're mistaking your emotions. I'm always going to have fear. It's never going to be okay. I'm never going to be safe. Mistaking your physical body. I'm always going to look like XYZ, and I'm never going to be able to help myself feel better in my body. So mistaking these things that are fluctuating all the time as something that is permanent, and that causes us suffering. Another part of what Patanjali clarifies that avidya is in 2.5 is thinking that things that are, he says, impure are actually pure. So I'm thinking that my job, the way that I'm doing my job, is very pure. It has no ego involved. It has no fear involved. It's just perfect. Maybe that's not quite true, right? Maybe there's some things that are tainted by the ahankara, are tainted by the manas mind, right? The mind that's kind of all over the place. Another one about avidya, this mistaken or misperception, is mistaking pain for pleasure. Mistaking that the wine drinking or the coffee or the shopping is going to give you pleasure. Really, you're just covering up not feeling well and trying to use something to get yourself to feel better. And again, that comes back to addiction. And then here's the crux of the issue in Yoga Sutra 2.5 when it comes to this misperception and forgetting who you really are, which is Purusha. The cherry on top of it all is mistaking your non-self for yourself, mistaking your prakriti, your thoughts, your emotions, your body, and thinking that's who you really are, when really you are the observer, you are the witness. So what's really happening when it comes to avidya, the first klesha, is that we're starting to identify with our prakriti more than our true nature. So instead of kind of seeing your thoughts and your emotions and your roles, kind of passing through, you start to believe, I am these thoughts. I am depressed. I am anxious. I am my success. I am my failure. This is my story, and it can never be changed. And it's this confusion of forgetting who you really are that is the root of the other kleshas. Now, some people might say, oh, so you're just asking me to spiritually bypass this suffering. And I don't think that's it, actually. I think it's actually quite a lot of work and quite a lot of self-reflection and quite a lot of practice every single day through asana, through breathing exercises, through meditation, through mantra. It actually is a whole lot of work to accept all of that and feel all of that and be with all of that. And at the same time, remember, I am more than that. I am also, in addition to all those feelings and sensations, I am also this observer and this witness of my life. That's not spiritual bypassing. That's actually really, really hard to keep both of those things at the same time. I am suffering, and yet I am that with a capital T, meaning I am source. I am the creative force. I am the witness. And yeah, I'm suffering today too, and it really feels awful. So let's just again remind us that the root of all the other kleshas is avidya. You thinking, I am my thoughts, I am a failure, here's my story. That's the root cause of the other four kleshas. I'm going to take just a couple of minutes away from this episode to tell you about our Masters of Science in Yoga Therapy at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. Hi, I'm Amy Wheeler, and I am the department chair. And I am so proud of what is developing at Notre Dame of Maryland in this Masters of Science program. It is the only Masters of Science at an accredited university in the nation, and we're doing such great clinical work. We find that because of the clinical setting, the electronic medical records, and the training that we can give through a university setting, that our graduates are finding jobs out there in the field of yoga and yoga therapy. With a master's degree, in addition to your certified yoga therapist designation, I think you'll find that it's much easier to find work. We would love to talk to you more. We have one open house per month. If you email me, I can help you find out how to get to the open house and how to get more information. Check out the show notes, and let's get you looking into Notre Dame of Maryland's Masters of Science in Yoga Therapy. Thanks so much for listening. Back to the show.
So when we look at these five kleshas as a lived experience, we have to look at how they unfold one from another from another. And so if this misperception is the fundamental cause, then in everyday terms, it might look like believing that external achievements and possessions, my identity in the world, will resolve this unease that I'm feeling inside, this suffering that I'm feeling inside. And that's really dangerous because we all know that none of those achievements, none of those possessions, none of those identities actually make you feel any better. And in fact, you get those things. And if you haven't resolved the fundamental problem, which is to remember that you are also the observer and the witness, it might even be worse when you get to the top of the mountain and realize that. So avidya kind of sets the stage for everything. And we have to realize from the very beginning that it's an inside job. Now, to me, this is very important as a lens or a framework for yoga therapy. These type of teachings are why I'm really not okay with taking the Western allopathic lens, teaching what the five kleshas are, and then having someone who hasn't been trained completely just kind of talk about the five kleshas, or I'm going to give you a Dharma talk on it and you're going to feel better. No, there's really a lot of skill that's required to help people understand this fundamental misperception and how it's playing out in their life and how they can do something. They can be self-empowered to do something about it. So we're really asking ourselves and our clients and our students in yoga and yoga therapy to adopt this completely different lens. And of course, we still need to know all the Western allopathic stuff. Of course, we do, because we need to interface with it. We need to communicate with them. But we aren't going to adopt their lens. We're going to stay in our lens. So from avidya comes asmita, klesha number two. And this is a misidentification with what we could call the ego structure, or a misidentification of who you really are. And it occurs when the observer becomes identified with your manifest body. When you start to think that your thoughts, your emotions, and your physical body are the real thing, and you forget that there's an observer even inside of you. So you start to become very identified with your external interface with the world, and you believe I am my personality. It becomes solidified that this is my personality. I can't change it. This is who I am. Well, I would argue that's not true. You are not your personality, and you actually can change your personality if you'd like to. Another one is, I am my role. I am the daughter. I am the mom. I am the worker. I am the student. I am the teacher. You start to think that you are these labels or titles that you've been given, when really you are the witness consciousness, observing yourself as a mother, observing yourself as a daughter, observing yourself as a worker or a teacher or a student. And here's a really hard one. You start to misidentify with even things like your integrity or your reputation, thinking, I have to keep an image up so that people will like me, they'll love me, and I can survive. If I get enough people to believe I'm good and that I have integrity, then I'll be able to survive. And if people don't like me and they kick me out of the tribe, then I will not be able to survive. So your reputation oftentimes becomes a big deal, and your image. So the mind becomes the identity rather than the witness behind it. And this is where many psychological patterns become very rigid, very cement-like. This asmita tells you, you are this person with this personality in these roles, and you can't change, you can't shift, you can't expand yourself, you're stuck. And then you have to start living life to try to fulfill all that. And that's where the suffering comes from. Whereas if you could remember that you are the witness behind all of those roles, behind your personality, behind your reputation, behind your integrity, even, if you could remember that, it would open up a lot more spaciousness, a lot of softening for you to get back in touch with your buddhi mind instead of, say, your ahankara mind. I think asmita, this misidentification with the ego structure, is very, very connected to what we talked about prior, which is the ahankara, the part of you that realizes, oh my gosh, I need to survive. I'm separate. And it's all on me. I got to do it. Nobody else is going to take care of me. That ahankara mind and the asmita are very, very close together. And again, we're not blaming or shaming. I would say most of us are in this situation, right? That we haven't had enough to be provided for, that we are scared to death. We're going to lose our shelter and our clothing and not have enough food. It's real. So you can imagine how the ahankara mind and the asmita, klesha, like it's not as if it isn't real. What yoga is asking us to do is, yes, it's real. Yes, it hurts. Yes, this is not me making things up. And yes, and I am going to take time every day to remember I am the witness, I am the observer, I am something deeper than all that. You're doing both. You're feeling in this human system, which is why Purusha came into the vessel in the first place. It wanted to experience the fullness of the human experience, right? So we don't want to cover that up with addictions. We don't want to cover up the suffering. We don't want to run away from it. The Purusha came here to experience it. But don't get so caught up in it that you don't remember who you really are, which is Purusha. Okay, so now let's go to klesha number three, raga, which is attachment. So once the identity forms around this personality, around these roles, around your reputation or integrity, or even certain experiences that you've had in your life, you then cling to the experiences that feel pleasurable and you like, and you want to feel more of that. And you kind of have this desire to find those impulses that felt good again and again and again. So the things that previously brought you comfort or satisfaction, you're going to look for that again and again and again. That first sip of morning caffeine, right? That first sip of wine at night, that dopamine hit that you get from shopping, right? You're going to try to find that again and again. And so it could go for things like I just said, wine, coffee, and shopping, but it could also be the attachment to getting approval from other people, to being a people pleaser, to making them like you. And pretty soon, your entire self-worth is based on what other people think of you instead of what you think of you. And that can become very, very painful. That's one of the easiest ways to forget who you really are, which is Purusha. Another example of Raga might be attachment to success or ambition, kind of remembering, you know, last time I achieved this goal, 72 people on Facebook told me good job, then I could believe I was enough, right? So wanting success, ambition, wanting people to admire you and see you and value you. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those things, but if we're only depending on those things to feel better about ourselves and we can't generate that internal experience of, I know who I am, I like who I am, and even if nobody agreed with me, it would still be okay. That's what I'm talking about. We have to have both internal and external. We have to remember that we are pure, we are good, we are benevolent, we are offering compassion and goodness to the world, even if nobody else sees it or likes it. We're still going to do those things because they remind us of who we are and help us take one step towards being the observer or the witness. I think the second phase of that will come next with Devesha or aversion, but I'll hold off on that point for a moment while we finish up Raga. Another attachment we might have is attachment to certain emotional states. I like to feel this sense of well-being. I like to feel no anxiety, and therefore I have to take, you know, magnesium every single day, twice a day, or, you know, whatever it is, that instead of letting the feels feel, we try to block that and say, I only want to feel good. Remember, Purusha wants to feel the wholeness of being human. It doesn't even have a judgment on the days that we feel good or don't feel good. It just wants to feel the fullness. And so when we as humans start to say, I only want to have these kind of emotional states, again, that's putting on these glasses, our bias, our prejudice, that is going to give us a different view of reality. And that mismatch between the reality and how I want to see reality, that's where the suffering comes from. Because the nervous system, the mental habits, the communication styles, the perceptions, the ways you show up in the world, they're organized behaviorally around seeking out these experiences again and again. I mean, what I just said is a huge statement. Every part of your prakriti begins to organize itself around seeking out these pleasurable experiences, causing the glasses that you have on to get thicker and thicker and thicker and more detached from reality. Pretty soon, your entire world and personality and life is organized around wanting approval, wanting success, wanting to be seen, and certain emotional states. I mean, you might need to stop the tape here for a minute and think about that. There's a whole half of being human, which is a little more unpleasant, that you're cutting off and saying, I don't want to feel that. I don't want to sense that. I don't want to interact with people that, you know, make me end up feeling that way. I don't want to look at my failures. I don't want to look at really anything that gives me bad vibes. Can you imagine how much reality you're cutting off, or I'm cutting off, in order to try to stay in that place? Now, some people might say, well, Amy, I'm already suffering so much, I really can't afford not to go into finding more of a sense of well-being, and I can't afford to allow myself to see the suffering. I get that. There are certain stages of development where we're already so defeated and so low that we might need to shut out certain people, places, situations that make us feel bad. And I have no problem with that. I do that nearly every morning for myself. But I don't want us to forget the end game, which is to be able to experience the fullness of being human. So that's a step on the way, and many of us need that. And let's not forget that the feel-good vibes are not the ultimate goal of being human. All right, so now we go into the fourth klesha, aversion. It's the mirror image of attachment. So this is called dvesha, and it's the mirror image of raga. So if raga is attraction to getting more pleasure and more good vibes and more feel good, dvesha is the avoidance of anything that causes us pain or suffering, experiences that are unpleasant, people that don't give us good vibes, people that make us look honestly at ourselves and call us out, situations that kind of don't feel good, right? And you think, well, why would I go into that? Well, you don't have to go into it, but when it happens, we can accept that it is part of being human. The problem really comes when we are looking over and over again for ways to avoid feeling unpleasant. And again, this doesn't mean we walk into abuse. This doesn't mean that we get into relationship with narcissist. You know, that would lack clarity also. But some of the aversion shows up as being like really defensive. Someone gives you some honest feedback from a place that is intended to support you and help you. They actually care about you. They want to be part of your lives and they love you enough to tell you the truth. And you get so defensive, right? That's the line here. When we have like major emotional reactivity and the reaction we're having actually doesn't match up with the event, there's so much baggage from something in the past that's coming forward and charging up this current situation. And 3 days later, we're like, oh my God, what did I do? I screamed at that person. Really, it wasn't that big of a deal, right? And I probably overreacted. Another way aversion can show up is where we're withdrawing. I want to put this wall around me. I don't want to feel these things. So I'm just going to stay in my house and withdraw. And then also this resistance to discomfort, where I'm anything that makes me not feel good. I'm going to resist. I'm going to withdraw. I'm going to try to get away from it. So you can see how, together with the attachment and the aversions, this kind of creates the push-pull dynamics of daily life. And what clarity is, going back to the buddhi mind, is no, you don't want to stay in abusive relationships. No, you don't want to put up with people, places, and things that aren't serving you. But when is the reaction an overreaction, over-emotional, overly negative, overly withdrawing, overly, resisting? That's where we have to figure out the line. And this is why TKV Deskachar would say that yoga is relationship, because it's through our relationships that we get to examine all of this. We can't do this in isolation. That's why the very first part of the eight limbs of yoga is the yamas or the social disciplines, because none of this can be done in a vacuum. You cannot examine your misperceptions. You cannot examine your ego identification, your attachments, or your aversions in a vacuum. It is only through the tapas of relationship that you get to examine all of this. And it creates a lot of humility because we're all screwing up all day, every day. And we have to go back and apologize and repair and have compassion for ourselves and having compassion for others, realizing we're all human. That's all happening in relationships. So that's why TKV Deskachar said yoga is relationship, because we're working on all of these kleshas with one another, knowing that we're doing it and they're doing it. I had someone complaining to me in a group about some of the others in the group and how she was having to kind of make up for their deficiencies. And I looked at her and I said, are you unaware that they're also making up for your deficiencies? And it really stopped her in her tracks. She had not realized that. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about, that if someone really cares about you and they do it in a kind, compassionate way, and you've both agreed that we're going to have these honest discussions about what is reality, That's how yoga and relationship can help. And I don't want to use that as a substitute for lateral violence and for us beating each other up and being mean to each other and being like, well, you're delusional, so I have to tell you what's right. It's not that vibe. The vibe is, look, we're both imperfect. We're both human. And we're here to do this work together. That's the whole goal. That's why Patanjali wrote Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, so that there was this guidebook for how to do this work together. Okay, so let's go to the fifth klesha, the fifth cause of suffering, which again, I'll just keep repeating. It starts with the buddhi mind, which is the observer. That's where we're trying to get back to with meditation. It becomes about the survival mind, the ahankara, which then drives the manas mind, which is the interface with the world that's basically trying to figure out how to be safe, how to survive. And then it comes down into your sensory experiences interfacing with the world, right? So all of what we're trying to do is move back up the chain from letting go of the attachments and the aversions and the of our sensory experiences, letting go of that asmita, that ego identification that's so scared it's not going to survive, again back to the ahankara, so that we can have more clear perception. We call that viveka, back remembering, like, oh, there is a part of me that's safe. That's the buddhi mind. There is a part of me that's going to be okay. It feels really crappy right now, but there's also something in me that knows, something deeper that knows it's going to be okay. I just keep repeating this circular learning over and over. So let's go to number five, abhinivesha. This is the fifth klesha. Even though misperception of Purusha and Prakriti are the root of all of it, I think this one is also pretty strong for most of us. It means fear of loss or fear of dissolution. Could be loss and dissolution of a relationship, of a job, of a situation that you like. It could even be death. That this fear causes us to cling to life. Even the people who are very wise, very learned, very liberated, still have this deep fear. And again, it goes back to the ahankara, that part of you that wants to survive, which is a really great part of you. You wouldn't be here without that. It's not the bad guy. But sometimes it gets a little bit out of hand. So this fifth klesha expresses itself as the fundamental fear of losing the identity that you've built for yourself, the personality that you've built for yourself, the relationships that you've built for yourself, possibly all of that on raga. It fears losing control because then it can't survive. It fears that unpleasant things are going to happen and it's not going to feel good and you want to push that away. That's coming from this fear. And it may even be fear of losing not just a loved one, but even losing yourself. Losing your mind, losing your body. As we get older, our minds and our bodies don't function well anymore. And anyone who's been with a parent or a loved one as they're aging, you can see the decline happening and how much control needs to be let go of. And how the things you used to do and you used to identify with, they're gone. You're moving back to buddhi mind. You're moving back to Purusha, you're moving back to being the witness and the observer because pretty soon you're not going to have this body. You're not going to have this mind. You're not going to have this personality. You're not going to have this house. Now, I know these are the harder teachings, but they are part of yoga. They are part of yoga therapy. And this is the lens through which we're working, that things emerge, they manifest fully, and then they go into dissolution. And at some point, the physical manifestation is no longer here, but the witness and the observer and the consciousness is still here. So it is fear of physical death in the final stage, but it's also fear of losing your status, fear of losing your relationship, and maybe even fear of losing your familiar sense of self. And it just kind of shows how strongly we identify with the structures of our prakriti body. So The reason at the beginning I said that I love Yoga Sutra 1.3 is because Yoga Sutra 1.3 is about returning to our essential nature. Tada drashtuhu svarupe avasthanam. Then the seer abides in their true nature. They become the witness, they become the observer. So when we get all tangled up in these kleshas, misperception, over-identification, preferences for and against, and fear, we become entangled with the movements of the mind that make us suffer more. But when we go into meditation and those fluctuations can settle, something remarkable happens, and we have this remembrance of our own observer, our own witness. And then in that moment, when the thoughts still arise, the fear still comes up. If you're in a human body, the fears, the attachments, they're still going to come up. The emotions are still going to come up because you're a breathing being. But they'll move through your system. They'll arise and fall. And at that time, once you start to be able to ride the wave, here they are. Oh my God, that's painful. I don't like that. Oh my gosh, it went away. It's okay again. Once we learn to do that, our identity shifts. That instead of being lost in the personality and the experience and the people pleasing and the wine and all the stuff out there, we become the witness of this experience of being human. And that's what Patanjali calls svarupa, our essential nature. That's what we're trying to get back to. So I would argue that any yoga or yoga therapy that doesn't look at these teachings very deeply, maybe we're missing the whole point. So the therapeutic implications of this, why this matters in modern life, is that the kleshas are not an abstract philosophy. They're not a checklist. That they actually describe the patterns that appear when we're in psychological distress, relational conflict, addiction, over-identification, fear-driven decision-making. I mean, oh my gosh, right there. All those things I just listed. Can you imagine how your life would shift if those things shifted? And this practice of yoga with movement, breath, attentional training, ethics, that eight-limb path helps us to gradually loosen the grip on these patterns of being human. As our clarity increases, our nervous system starts to become more stable, and our mind becomes more spacious, and our heart has more compassion. And then over time, individuals begin to experience moments where they're not defined by their thoughts, or their past, or their future anxieties, that we're just right here, right now, in this human body, experiencing things in the present moment. So, as we close this episode, I have a few reflective questions for you. What if the goal of yoga is not to become something different or to suffer less, but what if it's to remember who you really are? What if freedom doesn't come from controlling our environment and getting the perfect personality? What if it comes from accepting ourselves as flawed humans doing their best, having a lot of attachments and aversions and fears? What if we accept that about ourselves and give ourselves some sweetness and compassion around, wow, this is painful being a human? And other people have behaved badly. Yes, they have. And there's some people I need to set boundaries with. And they're struggling just like I am. Another reflection might be, can I recognize the difference between the changing moments of my emotions, my thoughts, my body, and kind of also at the same time feel the steadiness and the safety of the witness or the observer? And when we can hold both of those at the same time, the recognition of the Purusha inside of us becomes stronger. And the kleshas start to break up, they become weaker. And this, again, is when you can rest in your own true nature. So I leave you with this today. I love these teachings. I hope you do too. And we'll see you next week. Thank you for being a listener of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We have done over 200 episodes and we have had over 200,000 downloads. And we hope that in some small way, we have supported you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast in 2026, there's several meaningful ways you can do so. First, you can become a member of our Patreon community and donate as little as $5 a month to keep the podcast going. Your contribution helps us to sustain the depth and quality of conversations on the podcast. A second option is that you become an Optimal State mobile app member for both Android and iPhone. Again, this is about $5 a month, and we're going to start providing a lot of amazing content on our mobile app in 2026. We'll definitely want you to be part of that community. We also have a book coming out called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. This book will be published by Routledge Publisher in spring 2026. It's written by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan. We hope you'll consider purchasing this book when it comes out in the spring of 2026. Again, the name is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Wheeler and Sullivan. For those of you who are seeking advanced training in therapeutic yoga or in yoga therapy, please consider checking out the programs at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. We have a MS in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's degree therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare providers that's starting in the fall of 2026. In addition, we have a comprehensive Ayurveda certificate program also geared towards licensed healthcare providers. Each one of these programs is a pathway designed to support healthcare professionals and yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are ready to integrate these teachings into clinical, education, and community settings. All right, thanks for listening and thanks for supporting the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.